We're hearing some of the 200 protesters who gathered outside a hotel yesterday afternoon in Sacramento, California. It's where Attorney General Jeff Sessions delivered a speech to the California Peace Officers Association. The Trump administration took California to court on Tuesday over its sanctuary city policies. We're talking about the lawsuit, what it means for immigration policies across the country on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Attorney General said states cannot defy the federal government when it comes to immigration. Sadie Gurman covers the Justice Department and the FBI for the Associated Press. Sadie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, this suit goes after three new state laws in California, but let's look at the backdrop of this. What led up to Tuesday's lawsuit? Because one of the first things President Trump did in office was to sign an executive order trying to discourage municipalities from protecting undocumented immigrants from deportation. Help us construct what's led up to this point of suing California.
Well, Trump and Sessions have been steadily escalating their threats to crack down on so-called sanctuary cities. Sessions has been threatening to withhold some coveted federal grant money from these places for months and months now. But this was sort of the most aggressive tact that the Justice Department has taken so far. And it's one of a number of sort of tough immigration enforcement policies that this attorney general has pushed for. But this is definitely the most aggressive move yet.
So what is each side arguing in this case?
Well, the Justice Department says that three California laws that were recently passed sort of in response to these Trump policies and threats actually flout federal law and undermine federal law and keep Homeland Security and ICE agents from being able to do their jobs. California says, you know, it has the right to do this and that it is protecting, you know, people who are in the country illegally because, you know, that actually promotes public safety and sort of promotes the, you know, sort of cooperation with federal agents that they think actually helps drive down crime. Sessions says the opposite is true, that these policies make the city more and the entire state more dangerous. So it is really definitely a war at this point.
The Justice Department says California is violating the Supremacy Clause. Can you help us explain what that is?
Sure. So that is the clause in the Constitution that says that federal law preempts conflicting state law. So basically, if a state law is in conflict, in this particular case, an immigration policy is in conflict with existing federal law, that the federal law is what should stand. And in this case, you know, Sessions is saying that you know, only the federal government can set immigration policy. And he's actually relying heavily on a case from 2012 in which the Supreme Court weighed in on behalf of the Obama administration after Arizona passed some particularly tough immigration laws in its state.
So Attorney General Jeff Sessions, he called out Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf yesterday, accusing her of putting law enforcement officers in danger when she warned her city of a possible raid from ICE. Sadie, why did the Attorney General single out Oakland?
Well, I think he was particularly aggravated that she would not cooperate, but actually, I guess, warn in advance of these raids. You know, they're particularly angry with California because, you know, of a number of reasons, but I think that state's policies sort of, you know, they're very vocal about their policies, and that sort of, you know, has brought the ire of the Justice Department.
Well, she said that when she warned Oakland residents of a potential ICE raid, she was just informing them of their constitutional rights. But is what she did actually constitutional?
I think that is sort of up for debate. I think Jeff Sessions would certainly say no, you know, that you don't have the right to be living here in the country illegally. But I think that's sort of one of the core debates here.
We're talking right now with the Associated Press reporter, Sadie Gurman. She covers Justice Department and the FBI. We're talking about the speech Attorney General Jeff Sessions made yesterday in Sacramento and the lawsuit that was brought by the Justice Department on Tuesday afternoon, going after three new state laws in California that are considered sanctuary laws. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the Justice Department's lawsuit against California? Do cities and states have the obligation to carry out federal immigration law? Where do you stand on this? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Sadie, going specifically into these three California laws that are being challenged by the Justice Department, what do these laws really do? How do they protect certain immigrants?
Well, I think the core one, at the heart of SB 54 is, this plan that police departments in the state cannot, are prohibited from asking for a person's immigration status when they take custody of them and then relaying that information to federal immigration authorities. There's a number of different things that the police are prohibited from doing when it comes to participating in immigration enforcement as part of that bill. Another bill that they're taking issue with is designed to thwart against workplace raids by preventing federal authorities from going into certain businesses without having a warrant. And that's designed to sort of crack down on these workplace enforcement actions that ICE has been taking lately. And then the third one, it deals with the federal, local authorities contracting with certain private companies for ICE detention facilities and things like that. So it's just sort of a far-ranging set of rules that limits the amount of cooperation that local authorities can give to federal immigration officials.
How are the sanctuary city laws viewed in California, particularly by state law enforcement there?
I think that there is pretty much it's a mixed view. Sessions was speaking yesterday to a group of police officials who have previously opposed some of the sanctuary policies. I think other police departments have said, we need to be reserving our resources for for local crimes, things that are in our purview to enforce. So I think it's kind of a split, mixed view among law enforcement, but there are certainly some people who support what the Attorney General is saying.
We had Amy who called in with a question who asked, is the federal government suing other states like Minnesota that have sanctuary cities?
At this point, no, but they have made it clear, the Justice Department has made it clear that they are looking at similar policies in municipalities and cities across the country, and that if they find something that they feel is as egregious as this, they could potentially take the same action. And certainly they're looking to withhold grant money from other places who have these policies.
You talked a little bit before about some legal precedent on this issue. In 2010, Arizona passed tough immigration legislation that was mostly blocked by the Supreme Court. What can that case inform us about what might happen next in California?
Well, it was definitely a different set of circumstances. But in that case, the Supreme Court found similarly that federal immigration law trumps any sort of state law, that might conflict with it. So even though it was a different set of circumstances, the law in question in Arizona was particularly tough and was designed to sort of, be a more intrusive enforcement mechanism for immigration policies. I think that the Justice Department certainly says that ruling supports what it's doing in this case as well.
Well, Governor Jerry Brown was tweeting about this, and he's been pretty vocal that he thinks this is something that has to do with trying to get distract from the Mueller probe. Have you been looking at that at all?
Yes, I mean, Sessions is currently recused from that probe. So while that may be his criticism, they are two unrelated things.
Should we expect similar lawsuits in other states, or is this just a symptom of the particularly rocky relationship California is having with the Trump administration?
Well, I think it is. The California and the Trump administration have been particularly at odds over a number of things, from marijuana to taxes to this. So it's definitely, ratcheting up that escalating feud between them. But you know, the Justice Department has also made it clear that if they find, you know, in the course of reviewing, you know, state law and local sort of rules, you know, that they could bring similar actions against other places. It's just, this is, they said that this was sort of the most egregious and the most, they were the most vocal about what they were doing. And so this is where they wanted to start.
Sadie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sadie Gurman covers the Justice Department and the FBI for the Associated Press. You can join in on this conversation about sanctuary cities and the lawsuit against California at 800-642-1234. Do you think cities should comply with immigration enforcement, or do you think it's okay for cities and states to have more autonomy on this matter? Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Attorney General Jeff Sessions told a meeting of law enforcement groups in Sacramento yesterday, quote, "We are simply asking California and other sanctuary jurisdictions to stop actively obstructing federal law enforcement." That demand has been formally lodged in a lawsuit the Department of Justice filed Tuesday in federal court. We're talking about it on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now let's bring in Rick Sue. He's a law professor at the University of Buffalo and a visiting professor at Washington University in St. Louis. He used to clerk in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, worked in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. He's an expert in the role of local police in enforcing federal immigration policies. Rick, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we'll dig into the lawsuit in just a moment, but setting that aside, Attorney General Jeff Sessions said federal law is, quote, the supreme law of the land, and that, quote, a refusal to apprehend and deport those, especially the criminal element, effectively rejects all immigration law and creates an open borders system. So do states have an obligation to carry out this federal immigration law, as Sessions seems to imply here?
So they do not. And in fact, there is a Supreme Court precedent that says that the federal government cannot force states and localities to participate or to implement federal law, federal responsibility. So in that particular perspective, there is actually no constitutional obligation. In effect, the federal government cannot force states and localities to do so. What's interesting here, of course, is over the years, the federal government has become extremely dependent on state and local cooperation. And now they seem to want to shift that cooperation into something more akin to a mandate.
How have they become more prone to rely on states?
So this actually started really in the Bush administration, though the roots of it were established in the Clinton administration. There was a push, especially after 9/11, to greatly expand immigration enforcement. But as often the case, they did it in a way that tried to leverage, as some people would say, the existing law enforcement resources. And what that meant was state and local law enforcement. We are a country in which federal law enforcement pales in numbers to state and local. Originally, that was mostly voluntary and a cooperative arrangement. But over the years, as it became reliant on detection in local jails, especially as Obama focused on criminal aliens, this has become a dependency. And as a result, I think the federal government is very concerned that if states and localities start pulling out from cooperating, that this would affect their capability of actually carrying out the number of removals that they would like to carry out.
The government, Trump administration, is saying this puts law enforcement officials in danger, in jeopardy, their lives in jeopardy. How so? What is the argument there?
So there is an argument that seems to be strung up with a broader narrative with the Trump administration about the criminality of immigrants, the dangers that it poses to communities. This connects up in some ways with this conceptualization about cities being sort of the haven of crime and crime going up. Of course, none of this is actually true. This is a lot of a narrative that seems to be recycled from the 1980s, but it seems to be very effective politically in framing this issue issue as one about really protecting the localities. Now, of course, the cities are arguing who better knows what's to protect the cities than what the cities themselves. And they're arguing essentially that we believe that actually participation does not increase security in our communities. And in fact, we do not feel that criminality or participation here is actually a big concern, something we should dedicate our resources to, as opposed to investigating other issues like violent crimes or murders.
Let's go to the phones now and bring in a question from Paul in Big Bend. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. Hi. I'm all for immigration as long as it's legal. We need talented, hardworking, taxpaying individuals in this country. It's just so hard for me to understand as a working poor guy with girls why anyone would encourage or even orchestrate illegal immigration to this country. Gosh, you know, I'm reading all of these statistics about financial implications. We're talking $160 plus billion a year.
So,
what we could spend on that, you know? And now some of these illegal immigrants are receiving not just food, clothing, shelter, medical care, health care, but college tuition, which I can't afford for my own children.
So, Paul, what do you make of this lawsuit brought by the DOJ? What do you see in it?
Well, look, there's illegal immigration. There is the law that needs to be followed. You know, and as a parallel, you know, with the DACA dilemma that we're in, this huge Titanic that we brought ourselves into, yeah, okay, another amnesty. Whoa, another amnesty would just bring the problem around full circle again.
Well, let's get a response now from Rick Sue from the legal angle there. So Paul's bringing in a number of issues here, but certainly the level playing field is one of those themes.
Yeah, so this is certainly fed into the larger debate about whether or not immigration is good and, of course, legal versus illegal. But in some ways, I think what the states and localities are sort of focusing on is, in some ways, at what cost. At least the argument they're making is that they're not necessarily against the enforcement against undocumented immigrants. But what ends up happening is a lot of these enforcement measures, these workplace raids, these neighborhood sweeps, really affect actually a much broader swath of the population and residents, legal immigrants certainly, and actually a lot of cases United States citizens. And in fact, many of these things are justified on the basis that the federal government has not necessarily been that great in distinguishing, and a lot of citizens have actually been implicated, either been fired or been locked up in detention facilities. And oftentimes the cities are paying the cost of the constitutional violation. So there certainly is a political message here, but at least the way the state is framing it in the way they wrote the law, where the concern about is actually the effect this has on the community and residents who are not undocumented immigrants, and that they have an interest, a legitimate state interest, in trying to protect those individuals as well.
Paul, thanks for the call. One of the California laws the Justice Department is hung up on prohibits private employers from cooperating with federal immigration officials. It also requires those employers to give workers a heads up about a possible worksite enforcement inspection. Business owners can be fined up to $10,000 for failing to comply. Does the Attorney General make a good argument here against this law, or is it legally sound?
So something very interesting here is California certainly did their homework, right? So when they wrote this particular law, unlike the Arizona, if we come back to that, they wrote it in a way that specifically said that all federal law must be complied with. We're merely regulating, let's say, in the cracks. So with regard to what the Congress has authorized the federal government to force employers to do, verification of I-9, the filling out of I-9 forms, we all do that, every one of us, even if we're not immigrants, when we apply for a job. That isn't changed. What has happened is the administration, through practice, has increasingly relied on, when they don't have this explicit authorization, the consent of employers, right? It's like the federal government usually cannot search a house without a warrant, but if they get your consent, then they can do it. And essentially what they're trying to suggest here is Congress doesn't require employers to give that consent. We're saying in California, we're not going to allow employers to give that consent. So they are writing it around what the congressional mandate says. The question is whether or not in between the cracks and what the administration is doing also constitutes a federal immigration law that would preempt state law that regulates in between those areas.
Rick Hsu is with us. He's a law professor at the University of Buffalo. He's a visiting professor at Washington University in St. Louis. He used to clerk in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, worked in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, expert in the role of local police in enforcing federal immigration policies, talking about the lawsuit against California. Your reaction at 800-642-1234. Is Attorney General Jeff Sessions right to get tough on local governments over matters of immigration? Are so-called sanctuary cities and states putting the lives of residents and law enforcement officials in danger? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to John now, joining us from Appleton. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you both for all you do. If the guest sees any parallels between this situation and what happened in the 60s. I'm a fan of Martin Luther King. I know he relied on the feds to help enforce bad state laws. Do you see any evolvement of that? I mean, it seems like a twist, a big reversal of that trend. So I just wondered what you thought about that as a law professor.
Yeah, so there definitely is reversals all around. And we could definitely go back to sort of the idea in the 60s of the federal government really enforcing individual rights and states and localities sort of resisting it. We can certainly go even more recently to, you know, U.S. versus Arizona, where the state was actively trying to increase immigration enforcement because of a belief that Obama wasn't doing enough. And of course, the Obama administration saying, this is our turf, don't get involved. What's interesting, though, however, I think about some of those other contexts is in the case of the civil rights movement, especially, there were explicit federal laws that states and localities were violating. They were resisting. And in fact, they were saying they were doing so. We do not think those laws are good. We're just not going to comply with them. And in that case, the federal government, which actually moved in maybe a little bit later, even after a lot of encouragement, sort of stood in to say, look, we're going to enforce the Supreme Court's decision. We're going to enforce the civil rights laws that have been enacted. Here, what's interesting, and again, there's a little bit of debate on this. What's interesting is California is not explicitly saying in the laws themselves that we do not want to follow a federal law or we resist them or we don't recognize the legitimacy of them. The laws are written in a way that says, no, you should comply with all federal law, but where federal law has not spoken, this, then you got to follow state law. And it's the federal government here that's in some ways making an argument that we've occupied the entire field. Our objectives is very broad. And in that case, even if Congress hasn't said anything, the states cannot regulate it at all. So there is a little bit difference in terms of how explicit the conflict is. But in terms of the political turn, definitely. Federal government changes administrations. States and localities have different political leanings. This, in some ways, is how the federal system was set up and is part of how it sort of operates.
John, thanks so much for the call. Let's dig a little bit deeper into the legal precedent on both sides. The people on the state's rights are relying on this 1997 Prince versus United States, which held up an opinion that the federal government could not coerce county law enforcement officials from Arizona and Montana to conduct background checks on handgun purchasers while the government assembled a nationwide database. Is there some foothold there in that precedent?
Prince is significant. It's probably in some ways the elephant in the room. And of course, it actually reflects back at the previous caller's issue. I mean, states' rights used to be, and under Prince with gun control, what we might consider a Republican or conservative position. Of course, all that's changed as control has changed. So why Prince is so important is because it established this idea of anti-commandeering, that the federal government cannot commandeer the state or locality to actively participate or pass laws in in support of a federal program. Federal law is supreme, but that also means that the federal government's responsible for forcing it. This actually explains the whole complication here, because the federal law actually does not mandate state and local law enforcement, even if Congress actually wanted to do so. And the reason that doesn't is because they were trying themselves to write around this decision, trying to make it about voluntary cooperation, but not actually going all the way to forcing them to do so. That would be unconstitutional. So I think Jeff Sessions in some ways is probably a little regretful, or at least does not. This is what's holding him back, because I think he believes that his powers and Congress should be able to mandate more aggressive enforcement. Federal government should be able to take control of states and localities. But this decision, and in fact, the federalism tradition in the United States suggests that they cannot do so. If federal government wants to do something, they got to do it themselves.
Well, then the Justice Department is also leaning on 2012's Arizona versus the United States, which struck down stringent Arizona immigration laws as preempted under the Supremacy Clause. What about that precedent there on the Justice Department side?
Yeah, U.S. versus Arizona was a very interesting case. What Arizona did, and the parts that got struck down, there were parts that survived. The parts that were struck down, Arizona was in some ways making a gamble. They explicitly passed laws that were already covered by federal law. So with regard to certain fraudulent documents, if you will, there was already a federal law on it, and then they imposed an additional state sanction. What they tried to argue is this novel theory at the time, this mirror image theory, which is, well, it's not preemption if we're doing the same thing that the federal government is doing, but imposing a sort of state penalty to it. And the Supreme Court rejected that. The Supreme Court said, if the federal government's already said and regulated something, you can't do the same regulation. That certainly established a supremacy clause, in that if the federal government has acted, then the state cannot act. What California is trying to do here is suggest, well, we're not doing that. We're actually regulating where the Congress has not actually said anything about it, where there is a blank spot. So in some ways, they're not pursuing that mirror image theory here in the way that Arizona did.
Well, Rick Hsu, every legal expert has been asked this question. Is this case on a path to the Supreme Court?
I certainly think that it's set up to be. And in some ways, when we've had these debates in the past, including an earlier decision involving California as well, DeConis versus Bica, that also went to the Supreme Court. It's interesting now, because I feel like the Supreme Court's been actually a little cautious and hesitant in sort of grabbing a lot of these immigration cases as they've been sort of moving out their way up in recent years. There is certainly a big question about how much Congress can occupy the field of immigration and displace states. You heard it in the press conferences between the governor and Jeff Sessions. The federal government's arguing that states are trampling upon their sovereign sphere, but the states are saying, no, the federal government's trampling on theirs. That's a big question of actually federalism itself, and how much, as immigration laws expanded, it should displace state regulations. If there is any issue that I think would attract the Supreme Court on that, that would be the one.
We're exploring the local versus federal balance of power on immigration as the Department of Justice sued California this week. Rick Hsu stays with us for this conversation. He's a law professor at the University of Buffalo. He's a visiting professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Key questions here: what is the scope of government's control over immigration? What is the extent to which state and local governments can regulate their own affairs? Where will this wind up in the court? You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up this conversation after a check of the latest news right here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the Justice Department's lawsuit against California on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DOJ argues that California is violating the Constitution's Supremacy Clause, which says that federal law is the supreme law of the land. California officials counter that they have the constitutional right to govern their state as they see fit. Let's listen to Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf on this.
A community that is one-third immigrants, like Oakland, is safer when our immigrant community feels like they can come forward and report a crime. I'm confident that what I did was fully legal.
And we're running this all by Rick Sue. He is a law professor at the University of Buffalo and a visiting professor at Washington University in St. Louis. He used to clerk in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and he's worked in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Getting your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the Justice Department's lawsuit against California? Is Attorney General Jeff Sessions right to get tough on local governments over matters of immigration, or is this lawsuit a type of political maneuvering by the Trump administration? Can you see both sides of this case or not? Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Dan now, joining us from Franksville. Thanks for waiting, Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is way off your topic a little bit, but it's really important, though, that, what the man said before, that the caller, you know, it sounds reasonable, but it seems like we're attacking the problem from the tail instead from the head, because immigrants don't want to come here in the first place. If a person just takes a teeny bit of time and just even looks into a situation like right now, but it's been going on in other countries down south of the border in Honduras right now, the U.S. is supporting a president that no one even wanted, that no one likes, and the elections have been found as a fraud. So
Dan, do you see this lawsuit as a meaningful step for the Justice Department here and for setting how law should be governed across the country in regards to immigration?
Well, it makes sense, but if you're causing the problem, then why would you say we're trying to resolve a problem when you cause the problem? If you cause the problem by creating, you know, basically slavery south of the border, well, yeah, there, you know, it seems like it's fraudulent and fake. But like I said, this is way off topic from what you're talking about. But, well, you know, when people are listening to the show.
And Dan, I think it's a really good jumping off point here for Rick Sue, because DACA, of course, is in the backdrop of this conversation as well.
Yeah, I think it's definitely true. And I think it's not entirely off topic. I think in the sense that we're all talking about, what is the best bang for the buck? Where should we put our resources in order to sort of control our borders and to have a functional immigration system? You have to focus on different sides, right? The sort of push factors that lead individuals to leave, along with the sort of enforcement factors in the United States of sort of pushing them out once they've come here. And I think there are individuals that feel that there may be more effective measures that potentially would affect not only states and localities less, if that's what we're really concerned about. You know, one thing is really interesting, especially, you know, DACA is definitely one of them, but also the discussion about the border wall and our relationship with Mexico. The caller is definitely right. Most of the immigration flows right now coming up is from Central America. And in fact, immigration from Mexico is now net zero. The amount of people coming versus the amount of people leaving is gone. That's a 1980s problem. In that particular context, Mexico is actually a very good partner for us in terms of their big border, if you will, between Central American immigrants coming up. You ask, can we make Central America better if we put more investment into it? Or, Alex, do you think about the sort of drug trade that's really fueling a lot of the violence there? Can Mexico be a good partner instead of building a wall that angers them in terms of using them to help us? Or is it better to put our efforts and resources into neighborhood sweeps and raids in local communities? I think everyone may disagree on where it is, but I don't think it's wrong to have a broader discussion about limited resources. What would be most effective and what would have the least amount of impact, at least detrimental impact, on American residents and citizens?
Dan, thanks for the call. Let's go to Laverne now in DeForest. Hi, Laverne.
Yeah, good morning. Several things. First of all, wow, you clerk for the Ninth Circus. I think in a couple hours with you on your experiences with the most overturned court in the country program would be interesting. You haven't talked about the California law that says that a private citizen, if they even talk to, say ICE goes to a business and they're looking for somebody, an illegal, and if that person talks to ICE according to a law that California passed, he can be prosecuted. And the premise of the program, or at least part of the premise, was actually 180 degrees out of phase. This goes to the hostet. Jeff Sessions specifically said that California does not have to help the federal government. He said it would be nice and helpful if they volunteered that. So, you know, at least get the facts correct.
Laverne, thanks so much for the call. Rick Sue, your response.
Yeah, so in terms of the employer section, so it is the case in which it does prevent employers from, at least the way the law is written, granting consent to look at employee records and also sort of accessing non-public areas. So it's not entirely just about communication itself. It's about the data itself. Now, whether we believe it or not, the way the law is structured is not necessarily about just the records of so-called flagged undocumented immigrants. What they're really focused on in some ways is with regard to employee records and private data for all employees in this particular case. And what the federal government has done in a way that Congress has not explicitly authorized is use this consent to essentially do these audits that would then review this data for essentially every individual, and more than just the I-9 data, which federal government could do, but really all employment data. There were some concerns that essentially employers might be abusing this in terms of targeting certain individuals for exercising their rights, and also how that may affect citizens and residents, because of course all our data is in the employee data record. There is certainly a debate here. Jeff Sessions is arguing that this is an immigration interest, and therefore the state has, as they say, no legitimate state interest. But the state is arguing we have an interest in our employees. We have an interest in our citizens and our residents being sort of swept up in the federal government's inquiry into this particular data itself. I think you're right. Jeff Sessions is interesting. I think he does say that he you know, the whole system is built on what we normally call cooperative federalism, this idea that there should be more sort of negotiation. And the truth is Bush and Obama did a lot of negotiation. And the California law actually does allow a lot of cooperation. They list a lot of particular criminal matters that would sort of allow cooperation. So Jeff Sessions seems to be staying within the law by saying we're not actively mandating it. But the text of the complaint itself seems to suggest that they are trying to force sort of localities to at least not refuse to cooperate. Now, is prohibiting refusal a force to cooperate? I think Jeff Sessions may debate that, but certainly there are some individuals feel that if it's a binary between refusal, choosing to refuse, and wanting to participate, they want to eliminate one of them, essentially force localities and states into the other.
Rick, we've heard some cities say, you know, come out and say they're sanctuary cities. We're here in Wisconsin. We've had these conversations surrounding Madison and in Milwaukee. The definition of a sanctuary city seems pretty murky at best. Can you give us any clarity as to what that means and what it doesn't mean?
So there isn't any legal definition for sanctuary, and at least how people apply it keeps evolving. Originally, it just sort of there is a federal law that that doesn't allow localities to prevent law enforcement officials from communicating immigration-related data and citizenship information to the federal government. What most localities has done, and that was maybe the original sanctuary, right? So federal law sort of prohibited that. But what localities has done is sort of written in a way that looks at other things, right? Inquiring about records, complying with immigration detainer requests. And those seem to be the main issues that have been wrapped up with regard to what has been labeled sanctuary. One thing we should acknowledge acknowledge, however, is that even in the strongest and in most sanctuary cities, so-called, there isn't no cooperation. In fact, there is a lot of exceptions are written to the rule in which the locality specifically says we will cooperate. So there's been a lot of bashing of Chicago, but Chicago's sanctuary policy actually allows lots of areas in which they will cooperate with the federal government and actually encourages their local law enforcement to do so. I do think the sanctuary label being used so broadly, though, has kind of eliminated the bargaining and negotiation that has actually fueled this sort of relationship up until this point. Instead of looking at areas in which cooperation is still possible and very willing upon states and localities, there seems to be an attempt, and really on both sides, to use this issue to bash others for sort of political political motivations, I think. And it really does take away from, I think, the structure and the legal debate underlying it.
So as we start to wrap up here in the last minute or so, how do you suspect this Department of Justice lawsuit against those three California laws is going to play out here?
I think it's a little up in the air. My personal sentiment is, and this will sort of, I think, test the court a little bit. There are a lot of justices on the court, on the one hand, that is maybe in favor of presidential power, especially over immigration. But there are also a lot of them that have traditionally abided by a strong sense of state rights. And unless Congress explicitly occupies a field or a specific area of law, that we're just not going to say that the states can't regulate on it once Congress hasn't spoken. I think they would be very careful in drafting their opinion because if drafted too broadly, and here we're talking about immigration, but the opinion could implicate anything from gun control to healthcare to everything. I think they'd be very cautious about drafting it in such a way that would essentially say if the federal government even sort of tips their toes into a particular area or starts regulating in a particular section, that that completely displaces state and local regulations at all. There is a bigger question than immigration at stake, and that's the federal balance of power in this country.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Rick Hsu is a law professor at the University of Buffalo. He's a visiting professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Earlier, we talked with Sadie Gurman of the Associated Press. This hour of the morning show was produced by Bill Martins, Colleen Leahy, and Nyasia Ellison. Michael Deringer is our technical director. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network. Thanks.